Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 139 for comics originally released on April 7th, 2010. Starting us off in DC is Cinderella Fable Town with Love number 6. Now, when I read through a comic for the show, I have a text file up in Notepad on my computer, and I usually take a couple of notes. And, you know, for some reason on this one, I didn't take a whole lot of notes, and I think part of it was I just really got sucked into the story. I've really been enjoying this miniseries. I thought this was a really solid end to the story with a nice couple of, almost not quite epilogue-ish things, but tying off some loose ends and giving us some payoff in a couple of ways. And, you know, I really want to see this creative team do more with Cinderella and Aladdin on this kind of a thing, because I thought it was a really fun kind of a Fables twist on spy stories, and, you know, it really, I think, complemented the whole Fables kind of universe that they've got going here, and worked really well. I mean, I really enjoyed this issue, and this series in general. What did you think?
I agree. I loved the first issue. It was just a really nice, I mean, not the first, it's the last issue, rather. I mean, the whole series, though. It really is what Fables is all about. It was a nicely done story. Cinderella, strong lead character. I think it's a great character to spin out into this mini, and they left it where they set it up so you can have other minis, and I'd love to see those happen. The surprise villain, or, you know, whoever the bad guy, which I don't want to really give away because I know a lot of people read this in trade.
Yeah.
That was a great, great touch by Willingham. Cindy's, you know, the fable she kind of brought along with her.
But Willingham didn't write this.
Right, Chris Robinson wrote it.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's done in cooperation with him, I'm sure.
Right, but I'm assuming Chris Robertson was the one who picked the villain for the piece.
Right.
So, okay.
But, you know, did a really nice job. I mean, it was up to Fable standards, let's put it that way.
Oh, totally, totally. And I would say in some cases it exceeded the standard, I think, set by some of the lower points. Because, I mean, Jack of Fables is good, but I would rather see this as an ongoing than, say, Jack of Fables. At least the earlier part of Jack of Fables. It's really good right now.
I did like it more than I like most Jack of Fables stories. Literals was pretty good.
Yeah.
I guess one thing I'm not completely sure about, and it would be a good thing to find out from Willingham at some point, is I'm not sure how much ownership he has over the Fables franchise. I mean, is that like a... He created it, certainly. I mean, is that a completely... Is that like a work for hire? Is that owned by Vertigo? What kind of creative direction does he have over that when they do, you know, spin-offs and things like that?
That's an excellent question, and I'm searching for...
Because it brings up the question, you know, it's like, you know, because I was assuming that, you know, like when they do a spinoff that maybe, because he's not credited really anywhere, you know, so did Chris Robertson actually talk to him about, oh, this is what I want to do? It says Bill Willingham's a consultant.
The copyright is Bill Willingham and DC Comics. So that implies that he's got ownership of it and therefore I would hope creative control, so... I would assume he was consulted on this.
Right, and it has him listed in the credits on this issue as a consultant. So, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, they probably have some kind of, like, story conference where they, like, kick ideas off and, you know, so who knows.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was very well done.
Yeah, I, again, would love to see more of this. Like you said, Cinderella was a really strong lead character. They had some fun stuff as the side story back at what's going on at her shoe shop while she's not there. The use of Aladdin was really fun and cool and had a good payoff at the end. And that part of what I liked about this is it wasn't just, okay, adventure's over, story's done, we hit the you know, whodunit scene and that's that. But we actually got some stuff afterwards that, you know, closed off very nice, what happened over at the Glass Slipper while she's out. You know, her reporting back in on a couple of things and just a couple of pages that really give a good epilogue and nice sense of closure to the story that's, again, much more of a payoff than I think we get in a lot of stories. So I was very pleased with this. For me, it was a very, very solid 4 out of 5. And, you know, again, I hope they do more with this.
I gave it a 5. I really liked it. It really held up to my expectations for Fables. Fables is one of my favorite series. I like Sean McManus.
He did a good job, but there were a couple of things here where I thought the art was either a little uneven or could have been a little better. I mean, he did a good job, and if they do more, I would like to see him on it. But I think that was the main thing preventing me from giving it a 5. But it was close to that, so yeah.
So next up, we've got S.H.I.E.L.D., which I don't know if it stands for what it originally stood for or what it currently stands for or if it's completely something new, but it's the acronym S.H.I.E.L.D., and it's a new take on S.H.I.E.L.D. for the Marvel Universe by Jonathan Hickman with art by Dustin Weaver. What do you think about this one?
I read through it, and I mean, it just raised a lot of questions in a really good way. I thought this was something that it's certainly not like any S.H.I.E.L.D. series you've read before. And again, I mean that in a really good way. This was, I thought, something that it had 34 story pages and it used them incredibly well. It's just page after page. It's like, okay, where are they going with this? Hey, that's interesting. That's cool. Everything from the Brood apparently having been on Earth at one point in the past, what looks like an Egyptian version of Captain America almost. And some of this was not only just really cool, but then you get to where you have these just really awesome double-page splashes that are effectively used. And I thought the whole thing was a series of, I almost want to say the whole thing was heavy on teasers. It wasn't so much a matter of, okay, let's set stuff up so we can pay it off later, but it was a matter of showing just how vast of a canvas this series could and probably will cover. And it just seemed to be cool idea after another. And really, for me, hooked me on just the tons of story potential that this series has. And if they're allowed to run with it, and if it hooks with the audience, and they have the opportunity to fully explore this, that we could just see some amazing stuff out of this.
Like Galileo versus Galactus?
I thought that was kind of cool. There were a couple of things. I mean, there were two quotes that I wrote down, because they really, I think, are potentially very important or very interesting. One was, the shield resides in the west, the spear in the east. We've got the shield as an organization. Are we going to see a spear organization on the eastern side, if you will? Because they almost seem to be, I don't want to say telegraphing that, but hinting at that, which would be a cool complement to S.H.I.E.L.D. And again, expanding the mythos and broadening the story potential there. And then the other was, there a couple of times people are saying, this is not how the world ends. It's like, well, so how does the world end? Because it implies that they know that. And again, that's a cool concept. It's there's just so much potential here. And the art was really well done. The story has a lot of things. It seems to tie into certainly the Fantastic Four, both, I think, just general thematically. And one of the characters is a Richards. Another one is a Stark, implying it'll tie in with some Iron Man stuff, potentially. Perhaps that's how Tony Stark originally got hooked in with S.H.I.E.L.D., is just almost hereditary. This is nothing so far like the Nick Fury S.H.I.E.L.D., but it seems like his S.H.I.E.L.D. could be a modern incarnation of this, and they just decided to put an acronym behind the name. So I was really intrigued by this, really impressed with this, and really uncertain where the heck it's going to go, but very curious to find out, you know, how it gets where it goes.
This is the kind of story that Hickman was born to write. I mean, this is him taking the kind of stuff he did on his creator-owned work and bringing it to Marvel in a really good way. This, to me, is so 180 degrees different from, you know, Frankencastle and this that the guy's doing over in Punisher. You know, is he responsible for Frankencastle, or did he hand that travesty over to somebody else?
I thought somebody else was doing that.
Okay. I mean, even like the first run of Punisher, I don't want to like needlessly inflict that one on that sin upon him if it's not his doing. I was the first however many issues of Punisher, I was unimpressed by. I just think writing a standard Marvel superhero book, that's not his sweet spot. You know, because even if you look at Secret Warriors, it's not a standard superhero book, right?
Well, and I think
And
this is so much better than that.
yeah, it is, but I mean, you see the steps, right? You see Punisher, you see Secret Warriors, and you see this. And each one is like a step away from a Marvel U superhero book, and each one's better and better and better than the last one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you take a writer like this and you want to play to their strengths. And, you know, what he's done on some of his other books with kind of almost the alternate history and things of that nature, and again, the cool concepts and stuff like that, this leverages this, and as does Fantastic Four.
He did write Frankencastle, sorry. He's still writing Punisher.
I was actually pulling out my Marvel previews to check that. Hadn't found that, but one thing I will mention that's a little unfortunate is on page 59 of the April Marvel's previews is the solicitation for Shield number 2. So it looks like we're going to have a little bit of a wait for the next issue here.
Well, you know, the way that the art is on this, I can see this taking some time. The art was beautiful,
Oh, yeah.
very detailed, very nice.
I
And
mean,
again, like some of these two-page spreads, you know, that one with the big celestial by the pagoda, that was really nice. And even that the Galactus scene.
Yeah. No, this was
And even
a
some of that machinery that like Da Vinci and these other guys have. It's amazing.
Well, you look at the Florence stuff, you not only have the machinery, but if you look at the floor, there's line work on the floor detailing some of the design there. And it's like, a lot of artists just don't do that. So this.
His backgrounds are very detailed. He's not an artist that, you know, just puts a blank background up with a couple of characters on it.
Yeah, exactly. So I can see where this would take some time. It's a little unfortunate that at the moment it's looking like it could be a quarterly series. Hopefully that won't be the case. Because, again, I really want to see where this goes. And it raised a ton of questions for me, and one could argue it was heavy on setup, but I felt we had enough cool ideas thrown our way and, things happening here that, again, to me it was more of a matter of teasing than because I felt we got some sense of payoff, at least in terms of I came out of this feeling like I'd gotten a ton of story, whereas in other issues I feel all they did was prepare to tell a story.
Yeah, and that's a good distinction because a lot of times, because he doesn't resolve anything really, and he does open up a lot of questions. And sometimes when I read a story like that by another writer, I'll feel like I'm missing something, and I feel like I'm left hanging without any kind of satisfaction. And I didn't feel that way at the end of this story.
Yeah.
I felt satisfied with it at the end of this story, and I certainly want to come back for more like this. But I didn't feel like I was not fulfilled. You know what I mean? It was very, very good issue. Very good issue. I gave it a 5.
Yeah,
This
same
was one
here.
of the best things that Remen. This, in my opinion, is the best thing he's done at Marvel.
Yeah, Hickman's doing, I think, excellent work over on Fantastic Four, and I wish that was selling better, because, again, I think that's just good stuff by him and some of the best Fantastic Four stuff we've had in a while. And then this, to me, is on par with that, and in some cases, a bit better because it's got a kind of that broader canvas. There's a lot more that happened in this issue, and.
Oh, and I did make my cardinal sin once again on this episode. I apologize. I always cross over Jonathan Hickman and Rick Remender. They both came from Image. I don't know what my malfunction is, but it's Rick Remender that is responsible for the Punisher, not Jonathan Hickman. I'm very sorry, Jonathan Hickman, for painting you with that brush. I don't know why I do that.
I don't either. I was, again,
It's
very.
kind of like
Because.
your Darkest Night thing, except worse.
Yeah. Well, in my defense, the Darkest Night, Blackest Night thing is. I mean, they did change the oath at one point. So. Anyways.
I'm sitting here looking at Rick Remender and I'm translating in my head. Now, Hickman, you know, he did the stuff like Nightly News and Red Mass for Mars and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So,
What was the time travel one where the church goes back to kind of...
Oh, Pax Romana.
Pax Romana.
Yeah.
There's aspects of that, kind of a similar vibe in some respects here. Completely different story and different take and stuff, but, I mean, to me, the fact that he wrote that and he's writing this clicks very well.
Right. It's very similar.
You know, again, I want to see how the agents Richards and Stark fit into this. That whole, you know, is Imhotep, you know, kind of the Egyptian Captain America stuff, how all that plays out. This is...
No, I got the impression that that was Tony Stark's father and Reed Richards' father.
I was thinking that, too, based on the time frame, but, you know, we'll find out for sure.
Because the Richards has a beard, doesn't look anything like Reed, and the Stark, you know, Tony Stark's dad looks a lot like him when he's been portrayed before.
Well, and again, this is 1953 that we're seeing him in, so that kind of sort of fits. They may have to play a little fast and loose. It's possible it would be, you know, the grandfather, not the father sort of situation, but I'm thinking it's more likely the father. But again, how do those families fit into whatever the big picture is here? So, time will tell. Again, looks like we may have a little bit of a wait, but, you know, we'll see.
And then our last one is Codebreakers, number one, from Boom Studios.
I read this, and I liked it. I thought it did a good job introducing the characters. I thought there was a decent amount of exposition to do that. And it was very clearly, let's establish these characters. But it was functional and good nonetheless. But there was something about this, and I really am having a hard time putting my finger on it, that felt a little kind of by the numbers, kind of okay, establish the cast, put one in jeopardy, the rest of the gang teams up to save him sort of a thing. It felt a little forced, and it wasn't bad, but it didn't feel kind of organic. It was almost formulaic. It was almost a standard TV movie writing structure, if you know what I mean. And while, again, I thought it was a good story, I thought the art was good. The art was a little stiff in a few places. It was something that, I guess the best way to phrase it, it lacked soul, if you know what I mean. And again, I'm having a hard time figuring out what was it that, for me, made this be just an average comic versus something that really stood out and I thought had a life of its own. I mean, what were your thoughts on this?
I liked it a lot more than that. I really liked the characters. I liked, and I don't know how accurate it is, but it seemed like, I mean, whatever they were flinging, if it was, seemed reasonable enough to snow me under, you know, with the way these guys are talking, you know, the cryptographers within their world. I thought that the setup was kind of cool. I liked the code aspect. I liked the mystery that they set up with the possibilities and, you know, these guys that are going to go and try to rescue their colleague there. I enjoyed it. I gave it a 4. I thought it was one of the better series like this I've read from Boom.
Interesting, because, I mean, I don't disagree with anything you say on that, but it, to me, was kind of like how you felt on that Exile series they did, where it was almost cliche.
Yep.
Aspects of this feel that way to me. And I'm not saying it's a bad story. It's not. I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I thought it was interesting. And certainly the whole Codebreaker aspect, that in and of itself makes it a bit unique. But it almost harkens back to, I mean, some of the things are again, almost cliche, like the McGovern, you know, their supervisor being a complete, you know, Luddite who can't work a computer or whatever. Those kinds of quirks or whatever seem almost like, you know, pick it out of a list. It's like, okay, we need something to make him a little different. We've got a lot of smart people. Let's him be technologically illiterate, essentially. You know, check that off the list. And I don't know,
I guess you could say that about almost any story, but it didn't jump out at me like it jumped out at you, so...
And that's fair, that's fair.
I kind of just got taken up by the story and followed along with it, and I enjoyed as it went along. I mean, I recognized that they were doing that, but it didn't bother me.
That's fair. I just felt the way they put the one character in jeopardy seemed a little forced. The, you know, almost psych moment where, you know, his boss is casing his place and, oh, well, I see this, this, and that. That means this, this, and that, you know. Again, it was a good scene, it was an effective scene, but it felt like something I'd pretty much seen that style of writing before, or that technique, or what have you. And again, I do think this is a good thing by Boom, but when people say certain things are almost being written for television or whatever, or for the movies, this to me had that feel in so much as it seemed to be leveraging what I would consider a almost, I don't want to say formulaic, but the television movie style of scenes, of character setup, of things of that nature. But again, it used them well, it used them effectively. By the end of this, we got a good feel for all the characters. They certainly set up the premise, moved past the first plot point or two, and, you know, got the story rolling. So I do want to give them credit for that. It's just, there was something about this, and like I said, I'm having a hard time putting my finger on it, that keeps me from giving it, you know, anything higher than a 3, and I'm not entirely sure what that is. Because I didn't dislike it, I just, it felt it like it lacked something organic to it.
Okay, well, I didn't get that, but I liked it, so I'm looking forward to the rest of the series.
Well, and I'll get the rest, and hopefully it'll, you know, work better for me on future issues. So, and some of this was just they had to set the scene, and there's only so many ways to do that sometimes. So what else did you read this week?
Read a couple of things.
Did you read Warlord?
No, I did not. I read a bunch of number ones. I read Avengers: The Origin, which the art was really nice, but this was a series that as I was reading it, it was like running through the back of my mind was, did this really need to exist? You know, basically it was like a retelling of Avengers number one, and they made it to about the second panel of page 7 by the end of the issue.
Well, what got me was it seemed to be just a tech upgrade for the story.
Yeah, you know, Rick Jones and the Team Brigade are using email and computers instead of ham radios, and, you know, there's cell phones and, you know, things like that. But it was like, and I love Phil Noto's art. I mean, the art was really nice.
Yeah.
But other than that, I really didn't see why it was necessary to tell this story as a 5-issue miniseries.
And it's funny, if they had kept it more, I don't want to say period piece, but didn't make those couple of tweaks or whatever, I'd at least been a little more okay with it. Because again, Phil Noto art, it was very nice to look at. But I felt the changes they made to the story were a forced upgrade for no value, and that was the part that didn't click with me.
Yeah, and just, you know, I picked up Hulked Out Heroes number one when I was at the comic shop.
I'll get that in my next shipment.
You'll get that next week. It was a Deadpool comic. That's what it was.
Well, yeah, because like, that, I mean, he gets hulked out in World War Hulk.
Yeah, Hulkpool. So, I, you know, I think I should have read through it in the comic shop. It was like, I was thinking, okay, well, we'll have the Hulk version of Thor and Spider-Man and all these different things. And it's mostly Hulkpool running around through the whole issue. It was like, Deadpool fans will love this issue, I think. It was marginal at best for me. World War Hulk's number one was complete waste.
I thought it was okay at best, but it's one of those things that we've had enough of the Red Hulk special. I mean, we've had so much building up to this. It's like, you know, just does this need to be a 50,000-part storyline?
It just didn't do anything to advance the World War Hulk storyline to me.
I thought it explained a couple of things that had just been kind of, that needed explaining. You know, unfortunately for you, that seemed to be more Deadpool's involvement in the story than anything else. But, to me,
yeah, it
wasn't that it didn't add anything to the story, it's that the story has just been going too long and I'm wanting a bit more payoff than I'm getting at this point.
Just get to the point.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, the fact that it's just like another one-shot or something, it's like, it's really making me feel squirrely about ordering these little side series to Marvel events, you know, because they rarely add any value, but you never know. Sometimes they do.
Yeah, that's the thing, is it's such a gamble. Sometimes they're complete, you know, why did they bother printing this? And there are other times where it's like, wow, that was really good. But it seems to err more on the why did they print this than the other. I read most of what came out this week. I'll be curious when you read The Warlord what you think of that. Still enjoying the stuff they're doing with The Last Stand of New Krypton. Secret Origins, or Secret Origin for Superman was really good. Still enjoying the Project Superpowers stuff.
Oh, I did read the Secret Origin issue. I loved it.
Yeah.
I don't know how the hell he's gonna wrap it up in one more issue.
I don't
That's
know.
what I'm curious about there, because that was the fifth issue, and it's like, wow, he had a lot to close off in the last issue of this thing.
Yeah. Nemesis the Impostors 2 worked better for me than the first issue. And I liked how they brought in both Batman and Wonder Woman and put a pretty interesting twist, not just on this story, but on the Final Crisis Aftermath Escape series that Nemesis was in.
Yeah, I didn't read the Final Crisis series or the Nemesis stuff, so don't know about that.
And what else kind of was good? Buffy was fun. Batman and Robin, I thought, was a good issue, really moving towards the, bringing back of Bruce Wayne. Raised a couple of questions there in the story that, I was starting to have as I was reading it. It's like, wait a sec. And then one of the characters actually asks, it's like, okay, they're playing fair. They're kind of leading me down the road they're wanting to lead me, so hard to go wrong with that.
A Sweet Tooth was really good. You don't read Sweet Tooth.
No, I don't.
I love that Captain America, Black Panther, Flags of Our Fathers,
That's
first
one
issue.
of the four or five I have left to read.
I really enjoyed that. I thought that was really well done.
Cool.
Set back in World War II. You have Fury and his Howling Commandos in there too.
I like the issue along those lines they did of Black Panther a while back. So it certainly seemed like this would be a good miniseries.
Invincible Returns, I read. That was well done. Knights of the Dinner Table, I read. What else did I get to? I think that was pretty much it.
Project Superpowers, number 8, I thought was really good too. I don't think you read that one though, do you?
No, I don't get that.
So, but yeah, all in all, good week for stuff. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it then?
That's all I've got.
Cool.
I did want to say a few things about the Wizard Anaheim show. I went to that Friday night, and I really think that show has the potential to be a lot better than it actually was. I think they suffered by having C2E2 on the same weekend, and I think Wizard really made a serious mistake in scheduling this show the same weekend as C2E2. All the comics companies are at C2E2. The only comic company that had a presence at Wizard was Top Cow, had a couple of tables in Artist Alley. The comic pros there, I mean, there were some good comic pros, but mostly smaller indie guys who it was good talking to. But most of the pros are all in Chicago at C2E2, and the folks who did come to this one seemed to be local LA people who didn't want to travel all the way to Chicago for C2E2. So I think the Wizard Anaheim show has the potential to be a really great show. I just hope Wizard in future avoids scheduling on the exact same weekend as another major show because they really lost out on this, and I think the show could have been way, way better than it actually was. Join us next week when we discuss Doc Savage number one from DC, Black Widow number one from Marvel, and Pantheon number one from IDW.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.